very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am your fingers or your
king. Doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one.
But
your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffrey Podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me as always is
Catfish.
Catfish, has it been a week since we said goodbye to Game of Thrones? Can you believe that this journey we've all been on for so long has come to an ending? Some people thought was good. Some people hated with a passion. How are you feeling in a life post-Game of Thrones?
Well, you know what I like about it is those two sets of people you described are evenly represented on this podcast.
They are. We represent all double L's.
Double L's?
Loyal listeners. Those who love the final season,
right,
those
right.
who didn't, and everybody in between. This is going to be a wrap-up show, kind of talking about the series as a whole, thoughts a week later, all through Season 8 and through the entire history of the Joffrey Podcast. We've been giving you our instant takes. We recorded our podcast immediately after we saw the episode for the first time. So now it's been a week. We can sit back, relax, and dig into some Joffrey goodness. Catfish, it's been a week later. Are you still frustrated? How are you feeling about the end of Game of Thrones?
I am, I guess I'm just ready to pretend it didn't happen and move on with my life and wait for them to do Season 8. No, I'm not one of the people who signed the petition to redo Season 8, but I am not... I mean, I haven't changed my mind. It left a sour taste in my mouth, and kind of, I don't want to spoil anything we're going to talk about later on, but it sort of irrevocably tainted the way I will feel forever about the series.
Wow, okay. I gave many high ratings to Season 8 episodes.
You loved them.
I was very high on them, but mm-hmm. I'll admit that it kind of broke my heart to hear people not like them so much. I was able to look past some of the quick pacing that I know some people didn't like, but in hindsight, I in some ways feel worse about Season 8, but then I watched this Game of Thrones, the Final Watch documentary that HBO aired last night, and we're going to talk about for a bit. And it made me love Season 8 a bit more. So I'm of two minds. I'm like, oh, that wasn't quite as great as I wanted to. Dang, these people work their tush off. And so why don't we get to it right at the top? Catfish, did you watch this two-hour-long documentary? What'd you think?
Well, why don't you talk about what you liked about it, Bubba?
What do you mean?
I mean, let's hear your thoughts on this amazing two-hour documentary that occurred while I had guests in town.
Fair enough. I just thought, I mean, people put an awful lot of work into it. What do you call people that are extras? The background actors?
Yes, correct.
The highlight on Andy McClay and his passion and his hard work. People put an awful lot of work into this season, into this show. I know so many people felt disappointed by how the season went, and they didn't appreciate that. But one thing that I just can't agree with, I agree with anybody's opinion, but so many people are like, oh, Dan and Dave, the showrunners, the people in charge of this massive production, they're like, oh, they just wanted to wrap this up quick and go make their Star Wars movie. Listeners, they took more time making these six episodes than they've ever taken making a 10-episode season. So this wasn't like, let's wrap this up quick for them. The actual production took longer than it's ever taken. And so they thought they...
I would have never thought that they were trying to wrap anything up. I mean, if you are in the work in the business and you're blessed to work on something that has so much attention... And, you know, that's another thing that I think we should talk about is, you know, people always say, well, this is the last water cooler show. And they've said that about a few shows. And so the question is whether we think maybe is Game of Thrones that really that last show? But they knew this was going to be part of their legacy. They love the series. They put a lot of heart into it. I don't doubt for a second that they put every bit of energy and thought and attention into Season 8.
I completely agree. It's just they, you know, the thing they say, sometimes say is if you're in a chicken coop and you've been there too long, you don't notice this smell anymore. Now, I don't want to say that season 8 was a chicken coop smell, but I think they were just too close to it. And from their vantage, without actually having written the episodes, they went to HBO and said, we think it's going to take 13 episodes. They kind of broke them down, but they hadn't written them. And so then, when they're writing them out, suddenly it's like, okay, 13 episodes, oh boy, but we're really going to have to make these episodes longer. They could get a lot of their viewers to go with the Daenerys twist, which I think is probably the biggest one of them all. And so they ended up with a very mixed reaction to the show. Catfish, let's just go right at the top, and let's talk about our rank the seasons. Do you have a ranking? Are you ready? Do you have thoughts on this?
I do have a ranking of the seasons. You know, I put them in order. Sometimes, you know, you have to think about it a little bit. Now, so here's what I did. I have season one is the first.
Okay, that's your favorite episode of all?
No, my favorite. That's my favorite season. We're ranking the seasons right now, not episodes.
Okay.
I need to focus you in.
All right. Yeah, I'm just saying.
You're like the producers of Game of Thrones. I need to focus you in on what's important. Yes, mostly, you know, this could be for other reasons, but and I could try to untangle it, but I don't think it's necessary. It's my most favorite season simply because I could not believe this was actually being produced and produced so well and acted so well. And I just thought it was amazing. And looking back on it also, they did an amazing job adapting the material they had. I was still, you know, I was on that bandwagon for a long time, trusting them more than trusting George. And then I sort of started to fade a little bit when they had less and less of the source material to go on. So I thought they did a good job when they had source material of kind of weeding out some extraneous stuff and doing a good job. So anyway, all that being said, the first season still my favorite. And then I'm going to go with season 4.
Okay.
3.
Got it.
2, 6, 5, 7, and 8.
Whoa. Yeah,
I know people are always down on season 5. But I will say this, it'd be a season, you know, it's not just about what's in it. And you know, I'm not clinical. I'm not cold robot. Maybe if someone robotically looked at it, they would say season 5. But it really counts if, to me, you don't stick the landing. And so because season 7 was the next to the last season and season 8 was the last season and I feel like the landing was not stuck, I got to put those two at the end. Even though some of the spectacle from season 8 was amazing. But as I was saying the whole time, like, I give it high marks for spectacle, low marks for plot, scripting.
All right, I'm going to...
And what about you? What about you, Bubba? So let's have yours. That's mine, so you have... That's the definitive ranking of the seasons from a purely objective point of view. So what about you? Where did you go wrong? What mistakes did you make when you ordered the seasons?
Catfish, I agree with you. I still, to this day, have the first season as my favorite and the best season.
Okay, good, good.
And so I think, why do I always love that season the most? And a bit like these final seasons, but let's get to it. The first season, everything mattered to everything else. What do I mean by that? Ned Stark losing his head mattered to the story at the Wall because of how it affected Jon and him wanting to leave the Wall. It affected what happened to the Robb story. It affected what happened to the Tyrion, and it affected what happened to everybody. Admittedly, Daenerys on another continent, some of her story didn't affect everybody back in Westeros, but a lot of it did. Daenerys's pregnancy, the attempt to kill Daenerys tied in. And so as great as some of these other seasons were, there just wasn't this cause and effect. Not everything in some of the other seasons, stuff that I loved, it was more remote. Like, so here's a perfect example. I loved Daenerys, her first freeing of the slaves in the beginning of season 3 in Astapor. But as great as that moment was, it didn't really have much of an effect on anything of the other storylines in season 3. And so that's just the way George conceived the story. Everybody goes their own separate ways and has their own adventures. But for me, because season one, everything kind of affected everything. Remember, Varys is in the Black Cell talking to them. He's like, your son is marching south to war. Well, why did that happen? Because of cause and effect. And so I have season one, number one. I have season two.
Got that right.
I have season three in second place.
That's wrong.
And so you had season four in second place. So I had season three, then season four. And I just really wanted to look deep into the episodes. I think the first five episodes of season three are really, really good. That's a good stretch. I think there's some stumbles in episodes six, seven, and eight of season three. And I know season three, for a lot of people, that crowd surfing Daenerys isn't a great end to it. But I'll take those first five being probably the best five-run episode in the series' entire run, plus the infamous Red Wedding episode, The Reigns of Castamere. And to me, that pushes it above season four. Season four had a lot of great moments. Certainly, it had a better ending, the very final episode. The Watchers on the Wall, the battle episode in season four, is also still very good. But I think there's a lot of flab in some of those episodes, specifically episodes six and seven of season four. And so it fell to number three, in my opinion. I'm taking number two, season two, and putting it in fourth place. I'm putting
season, that is the right place for it.
I'm putting season six in fifth place. Season six,
also the right place.
I always go to that. Season six, if you listen to my reviews, it's a 10-episode season. I personally only enjoyed and thought five of the 10 were really good. But those final two episodes of season six, when you talk about it matters how you end, those last two episodes of season six are two of the greatest episodes they ever did. Then I'm going to have go to season seven. And what I find interesting about season seven is this is a seven-episode season. Here, the first four episodes were good. The first episode was okay. The second, which ends in Euron's attack on Yara and the snakes, Ilaria Sand and her kids, or her one child and the other two sand snakes, it ends there. The third episode of season seven ends with the death of Olenna Tyrell. The fourth episode of season seven is the great loot train attack. And so those are four really good episodes to begin. So more than half the season is good. It's those last three of season seven which feature the White Heist. For me, the worst actual plot line in the entire show. So season seven falls there. And then even though I like so much of season eight, I'm actually going to put season eight in second to last place.
Now here's the funny thing. I would swear, now I could be wrong, but I would swear that you haven't given six higher ratings to any individual season than the six ratings you gave to these six episodes. In other words, you liked all of these episodes more than you liked the top six episodes of any other season as far as your rankings at the beginning of each episode. I haven't gone back to check, but that's what it feels like to me. So I'm surprised that you have it all the way here in second to last place, even though you should have it in last place. So defend yourself.
So I have season eight in second to last place.
Yeah.
I think that I gave the first episode of this season only an eight. I gave the second episode of this season, Night of the Seven Kingdoms, I gave that a 10 out of 10, and I think a lot of people agreed with me. But then what is hard to remember is I gave the Big Battle of the Long Night episode only 8 out of 10. And that was lower than you did, lower than you did, or lower than Mork did. And I said during the recap episode, I thought, well, maybe I should bump it up. But then the following week, I said 8 was correct. And so because that battle, maybe I had it too hyped in my head, I still think that's one of the weaker battle episodes. And so I went 8, 10, 8, then I probably went something like 9, and then I forget. I'd have to go over
it again. 9, 9, 10. I'm telling you.
Probably something like that.
You were very, very high on the season to put it as your seventh favorite season.
Right, 7 of 8. Yeah, so I didn't.
You were contradicting yourself somewhere. Somewhere in there, something doesn't make sense.
Well, I would put it like this. I think these episodes are consistently good, but I don't know if anything in 8 matches the loot train attack in 7. I don't know if anything in 8 matches the the great episode, The Winds of Winter, in six. And so I could just go down the line. And so what's funny is
I didn't know
is
we
I think,
were supposed to be ranking the seasons that had the best episode.
Well, no, I think a season's got to have a high, right? So if season eight, I really enjoyed
well, I would
it
say
a
when
lot.
You gave a couple of tens, that's a couple of highs right there.
True, but it was true. Fair enough. But I think overall, I think there were actually higher highs in the other seasons. And so even though I really enjoyed season eight, that's where I have it. Then I have...
I agree with you. I'm actually trying to be a kind of an asshole and get you to recognize that your rankings, individual rankings at the times were too high. Now that you have a chance to assess the season...
No, well, I still think that, okay, once again, I gave a 10 out of 10 to the second episode of the series. I thought that was a great episode individually. But as a whole, when so many people are complaining that the season is rushed, shouldn't you have taken an episode which really was a lot of talking, even though people loved it and had more happen in it? I think that's a fair argument in hindsight. And so I have eight, but let me get to my last ranked season of all. I have season five as the absolute worst. Now, what's interesting is, of course, what happened in season five is Hard Home, which I would consider my favorite battle of them all. But when I look at those just individual storylines, season five featured the rise of the High Sparrow. And boy, talk about somebody who was not a huge fan of the High Sparrow, me. Season five had the Sansa storyline in Winterfell. I actually kind of understood it. I've mentioned that before, but I still didn't really enjoy watching it. Season five had no Bran. And what's so funny is people now after season eight are so down on Bran, but I look at season six and I think Bran's storyline in season six was one of the highlights of season six. Season five had Arya.
Well, that's why he should have been the king, because he had the best story.
He did in season six. He definitely had one of the best stories then. Season 5 also had Arya's first year in the House of Black and White. I thought that moved slowly. I thought it moved messily. And so Season 5, even though it had one of the highest highs in Hard Home, I just never felt for that season as a whole. So in my opinion, that is the least season of them all. Now, what's interesting, of course, people hear that, and a lot of people feel very down on Season 5. You mentioned it yourself, Catfish. But Season 5, that year, Game of Thrones won an Emmy for Best Drama Series. Is there any
chance? Well, but all that stuff is usually, you know, there are older people in the, you know, deciding on these awards. Usually these things are a year or 2 years late, and then once people start winning them, it's hard for them to stop winning them.
Well,
I
want to get to that, Catfish. Is there any chance with such a rough, tough reaction to Season 8 that Game of Thrones can win best drama series again? Once again, in what a lot of people feel is the worst season, they won the Emmy for best drama on TV. Is there any chance after this season you think Game of Thrones has a chance for Emmys? Let's hear it.
I think it'll be nominated for sure, but right now I can't. I mean, I can't even think about what other dramas might be nominated. But I think it might have a hard time. You know, this is the, you know, for the idea for the Academy is, and let me tell you why it's hard for new people to break in without a lot of rush, is people do an initial vote where you vote for dozens. There's like dozens of shows.
Right.
And you can't watch dozens of shows. And then by the time they, you know, you decide on like six shows that they send you, they'll send you an hour or 2 hours of each show. And then if you're voting on people, they'll send you episodes of those people. And so it's just, unless these people are really dedicated to like, I want to see what really is the freshest, you know, things carry over a lot longer than they should. And because that happens, then the new stuff, the next thing to be discovered, takes a while for it to be recognized.
Yeah, I think the people who try to vote for these Emmys really do try their hardest to watch everything, but it's just physically impossible, you know what I mean? It's just incredibly tough.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so Catfish, we've ranked the seasons. Let's go through quickly through some other things. Favorite episode of all the episodes we've seen, I'm going to have to go with Season 6, Episode 10, The Winds of Winter. What's so funny is
Season 6, you didn't even like Season 6.
I have it ranked 5th, which is pretty darn low of seasons. As I said, only half the episode's connected, but that episode in particular, It's one of the longest episodes ever because it's at least an hour 15, but there isn't a wasted moment in it. So much of me, because I love that first season so much of me wants to go to Baylor, the episode where Ned loses his head, because that was so great. Season six has the benefit of culminating so many storylines, you know, finishing so many storylines, revealing R plus L equals J in this The Winds of Winter episode. So I was always hoping something could top it. Nothing, in my opinion, in Season 7 or Season 8 could top it. So for my favorite episode, I'm going with The Winds of Winter. How about you, Catfish? What do you got? Man.
Well, there you go. You tried to steal my thunder. For me, it is for sure Baylor.
Oh.
My notes say I had my innocence and Ned did not have his head. So... That was just an amazing, you know, having read the book and knowing that it was coming, I still thought to myself, this is a TV show, they may not do it. And for them to actually go through with it, and then just my, I know a lot of people, that I had known a lot of people who had read the books or were watching the series, and I'm just like, their reactions afterwards, like, I can't believe that, that effing happened, that really happened. You know, because it's not until you read the later books and you're like, well, you know, I mean, obviously when Ned's there, he's not a main character anymore, but he sure seems like it. So for me, it's Baylor. It's Ned's low point and my high point. And also, not to forget, our namesake, Kim Joffrey, really comes into his own there.
He does.
He looks at Ned and he's like, you know what the important thing is? The person who makes the decisions should definitely tell someone else to swing the sword.
That's how it is.
Yeah.
Well, speaking, Catfish, speaking of our namesake, the Joffrey of podcast, first of his name, first in your hearts, we have a category that I knew we would both pick Joffrey. So I had to do a category called favorite character who is not Joffrey.
And so
we could talk about Joffrey some more, which I know our listeners love, and we're going to talk about him more at the very end of this podcast, but I'm going to go first, and my favorite non-Joffrey character is a character who I think had her whole life shaped by Joffrey, and that is Arya Stark. Mm. When I look at somebody who was inspired by Joffrey, who cared about him so much she kept saying him every night before she went to sleep, and then she goes on to greatness by killing the Night King, supposedly. I really just think that's great. I think her storyline tracks. A couple of minutes ago, I mentioned that I was really not a fan of Braavos, but I'm so glad she did it because of some of the things, the Frey pies that she made. And it tracks. And her final moment, I thought, was the final moment that the show and story had been pointing at the whole time. So my favorite non-Joffrey character, Arya Stark. How about you? Who do you got?
Well, you are so friggin' close.
Close.
But what you forget is the ending of Arya is she's a quitter and she just sails off to do nothing. No responsibility.
No and wonder I love her. I'm so jealous. That's what I want my life to be.
Right. But that is not.
Not
the person that Joffrey has inspired the most to be like him. But like I said, you were so gosh darn close. Who was so inspired by Joffrey that they end up being royalty in their own? That's right. It's the Queen of the North, Sansa Stark.
Oh, wow. Really?
She's my favorite non-Joffrey character. And funnily enough, I mean, we'd have to see how things kind of change in the books, but the way the books are written, Tyrion is my favorite non-Joffrey character, and if I was going to take a Stark girl,
yeah,
I would definitely take Arya in the books, just because of the way kind of Sansa, at least as far as the book goes,
yeah.
Sansa hasn't had that huge, huge turn from spoiled girl who all she cares about is marriage and propriety and, you know, fancy things, to like a strong woman who cares for her people. So in the book she hasn't had that turn yet, but in the show she did, and even though you know, Arya learned to kill people and was badass and killed the Night King, who, like Cersei said, really wasn't that tough to begin with. You know, and that was just hashtag fake news. it's really Sansa who, to me, had the most amazing growth.
Well, you tell me, how did Joffrey inspire her?
Well, how did he inspire? I mean, first of all, she was just being, even like, just being his fiance for a while, she got to be close and just to see how things should be run. Take it no guff. Also, in the end, it felt like she took Joffrey's love of crossbows and intimidation and turned it into like her own kind of S&M clothing style.
Okay.
So she's like Queen of the North. Don't mess.
No.
Yeah, no. The fact that she learned not to take crap from relatives who are being dumb. You know, that she just like, I know what's right and I'm going to do what's right. That's the most Joffrey-like of all. Well, not sailing away as a chicken shit.
Listeners, let me say that we want to hear from you. We've talked about our favorite seasons, our favorite episodes, our favorite non-Joffrey characters. We're going to have a couple more categories, but remember, you can always write to us and tell us your opinion. It matters so much to us. You can write us at Double PHQ. That's the word double, the single letter P, then the letters HQ for headquarters. Double PHQ on Instagram and Twitter, facebook.com/DoublePHQ. Let's get to Catfish, a category where Joffrey smited a lot of people. But because of his shadowy exit from the show to work in the shadows, who would you have as the best Game of Thrones villain of all time?
You know, what's funny is people's expectations change throughout the series. It's kind of like me since 2016 where I was like, nope, there's no way it can get worse. And then every day, it seems to get worse.
Oh, no.
So, just like this, the villains, you know, people misidentified Joffrey as a villain.
Right.
You know, misinterpreting his strengths and moral stewardship as villainy.
Yeah, for sure.
And then when he was gone, you know, they latch on to Ramsay Bolton. How many people did Ramsay kill?
You know, I know he killed a couple of Ironborn when they took Moe Cailin. He killed a bunch of Ironborn when they took Winterfell at the end of season 2. He killed the old woman who was going to light a candle for Sansa in the tower. He killed a good handful. Who knows how many he killed in the battle against Stannis Baratheon.
Right, but I mean, you can't fully blame him for all those deaths.
I just did.
No, you can't.
Oh, sorry.
Like, a lot of people blame him for, you know, personally killing a Stark.
Oh, you mean Rickon. Good point.
Yeah, yeah. But that's Rickon's fault, because Rickon doesn't know that you're not supposed to run away from somebody in a straight line. All right, so, but getting back to it. So, neither of those people, nor any of the other quote-unquote villains on this show, ended up killing as many innocent people and buildings as Daenerys Targaryen. She, in the end, was the best villain. Help us, help us! I will burn you.
You know what? The next time you firebomb a city, I want you to think about that.
I will. Then I would be the Daenerys of the week.
Okay, I am going with a different character, one who has a closer tie to Joffrey, and that is Joffrey's mother. Now, Joffrey's mother starts out very nice, wonderful. She gives birth to... she gives birth to Joffrey. She does great things. She consoles Joffrey after he's been attacked by that vicious, mean direwolf. But it's only after... Mm-hmm. She slaps Joffrey in the first episode of season 2 that she revealed her villainy. Until that point, she was like a great queen, right? And her turn slapping Joffrey was a turn that shook me more and made less sense to me than Daenerys' turn.
It certainly was more impactful and hurt a lot more people.
So, for slapping Joffrey, and for everything else she did, like supporting Tommen, oh, terrible Tommen, I am going to name Queen Cersei as the biggest and best villain on Game of Thrones.
Wow, okay, all right, just slightly outgunning Daenerys. Good. All right, now, you know, a long, long time ago, it feels like forever ago.
It was forever ago. It was like our fourth podcast ever.
We did a best death tournament. And even at that time, we had enough to have, was the bracket 64?
I think it was 32? Only 32. It was only 32.
That's still a lot of deaths considering at the time. So now we're at the end now. Maybe we should do another. We could do a bracket of 128. but we're going to skip that. Take the 4-hour podcast where we talk about the 128 deaths as read.
Right.
And let's go right to the top. What's the best death on Game of Thrones?
Well, Catfish, I'm worried that you're going to pick mine, so I'm going to allow you to go first.
Okay, excellent, because I was actually worried you were going to pick mine.
Yep.
All right. This is in honor of your perspicacity, I think I want to say.
Yeah.
Bubba, the best death is a death that you predicted for years and years and years.
Oh, I know.
Yes.
It already.
It's the Iron Throne!
I had predicted that for a long time. Thank you. That was a good death.
It went out hard with prejudice.
Okay, so that is, uh-huh. You know, that's pretty bad/great death.
Yeah.
So my runner-up for best death is King's Landing.
Okay.
But I was thinking
it's in a coma, I think.
So I was thinking about this. And how do I want to die? You know, Tyrion always has his dirty, you know, I want to die with a woman's mouth on my cock kind of death joke, right? But I personally think that the best death went to the three leeches. So let's go back to season 3, everybody. These three leeches, their final moments on Earth, they saw a sex scene between Melisandre and Gendry. Then they get some delicious blood. They get fat. You know, they're given a last meal. Mm-hmm. And then they roast to death on a pyre. If that's not a great death, I don't know what is. So give me a sex show. Fill me up and then fry me. The great deaths. The best deaths on Game of Thrones, those three leeches.
It certainly surprised me because I did not think that you would come up with something more obscure than me. But congratulations. You did.
Well, I'm so sure you were going to say Ned Stark. I thought, okay, I'll have to come up with something else. And that's what I came up with.
No, it's the throne.
All right, Catfish. Well, you've already kind of hinted at the final question we're going to talk about is the one you talked about at the beginning of this podcast. Is there going to be another water cooler show where 19 million of us are all watching at the same time, tweeting about it? And I don't mean Big Bang Theory, because its finale actually had the exact same ratings, it seems like, as Game of Thrones. But worldwide, I'm going to assume Big Bang Theory didn't air simultaneously worldwide. What is going to be Game of Thrones' legacy? Is it going to mainly be that it was the last water cooler show, the last appointment TV, now that we're all on Netflix and other things and able to flip our viewing however we want it? Or is it a legacy of bringing, you know, big budget action things to TV? Is its legacy of a show with great promise that fizzled out in the end? What do you think 10 years time, when Tyrion is asking Jon Snow if they did the right thing in killing Queen Daenerys, 10 years from now, what is going to be Game of Thrones' legacy, in your opinion?
The first thing I'm going to say is, I think there's a couple different answers. As far as people's feelings about the show as the years go on and on, I am going to bring up one show that was also very, very popular at the time, and then it feels like the series finale has really spoiled people's opinion of it over the years, and it's fallen lower and lower in the sort of like amazing television shows, and that's lost.
Oh yeah.
So I feel like that kind of might happen to this as people get further and further away from it. They're going to be, but I think part of the reason why maybe Lost has also, pun not intended, lost some of the sheen is for the same reason that I think Game of Thrones might too, and it's sort of because unintended consequence of its popularity, and that is that Lost spawned a lot of more shows that were challenging because people realized two things. One, that a lot of people will watch those kind of shows, and number two, when a lot of people watch those kind of shows, the people who put them on make more money and keep their jobs. So I think as a result of this, and I'm hopeful, and we see some coming down the pike, that because of this, I mean, I'm not quite so sure that if Game of Thrones had this amazing run, that Amazon would have paid $1 billion for the Cimmerian or to play around in the world of The Hobbit. So because it's shown that people will watch these shows and pay for these shows, and there's a lot of interest, I think we'll see a lot more adventure shows and a lot more shows like it. So as a consequence of it, people will be like, okay, that was the first, but we'll also remember how it disappointed them at the end, without thinking like, well, without Game of Thrones, we wouldn't have Cimmerian. Maybe we wouldn't have Good Omens on Amazon. Now, maybe we wouldn't have all these other shows that I think they're going to come up now. So, you know, I'm glad, I'm eternally glad that HBO came up with it, and that so much of it was so good, and that personally, as a person who loved fantasy and science fiction and genre stuff, that it kind of came out of the shadows, and that it became, like, the fact that this nerdy stuff that I was always interested in, that was nerdy and people would make fun, that this was like the number one show in the world, was encouraging and amazing and made me feel like a part of something. So, I mean, that part will never go away. And I think that it's actually going to lose more prestige over the years than it should, simply because it will usher in a lot of other things that will also be good, and people will be like, well, you know, Game of Thrones, yeah, it was good, but it's not this. Forgetting that, like, Game of Thrones paved the way for these other things.
I think you said it great. I honestly couldn't top that, but I'm going to try. I won't top it, but I'm going to just go ahead and ramble for a bit. I want to point out Lost in that I am one of those people who watch Lost the entire way through. And week to week, there'd be these highs, and you'd go, oh, this is so great, this is so great. But when I, kind of a logical person, when I look at Lost and the ending of Lost, I kind of think to myself, these guys really didn't know what they were doing. They were just creating stuff as they went along, and while I enjoyed it, unlike the Breaking Bad guys who created stuff as they went along and kind of solved their way out of it, Lost just kind of said, forget about that, forget about that, forget about that. Now, I know some people are accusing Game of Thrones of doing that about, well, okay, Arya was a faceless man, she didn't use it in the final season, oh, we forgot about that. But the main thing I hear is I hear pretty much everybody saying, yeah, I can understand that the characters ended up in these places, but it was a little rushed, a little quick, and it didn't get me to that. And so I actually think, unlike Lost, people are going to soften on this kind of rigid, oh, what kind of ending is this Game of Thrones? And I think it's actually, in 10 years, can be thought of pretty well, mainly because of the high highs. This show built up this fan base, not just on spectacle, but on everything working together. Great acting, great writing, great twists, great turns, great special effects, great music, all this stuff. And I actually think that the anger towards this ending is going to soften as it goes on. And so I tend to think that in 10 years' time, we're going to have kind of look back at Game of Thrones, just like we do with The Sopranos, The Wire, Mad Men, that kind of stuff. And I almost want to point out that even though I think The Wire is one of the greatest shows ever, a lot of people were really down on that last season of The Wire, which, shock of shock, also had fewer episodes than a normal season of The Wire did. I think the praise of Mad Men when you go back and watch some of those Mad Men final seasons, there's a lot of flab. There's a lot of things that went wrong in there. Now, with Game of Thrones, you don't say there's flab like there was in Mad Men, but, you know, the Mad Men ending, you know, people don't talk about it so much because it was less story-driven, less plot-driven. It was more about these characters. But I just think it's going to soften, and I think people are going to look back, and if these spinoff shows kind of keep the magic going, I think people are going to be like, wow, that's where it all started, and I think it'll hold up. So that is my opinion on Game of Thrones legacy going forward.
So we disagree again. We're going to have to come back in 10 years and do a podcast 10 years from now and see where we think it ended up. Well, we'll probably disagree on where we think it ended up after 10 years.
Right. Well, I was down at the comic book shop, and this guy said this. So
I don't think people have forgiven Lost, by the way.
No, I don't think so either.
So, and I think at the time, that's what people were saying. The producers were like, well, you know, people were upset, but over time, and that did not happen. So,
well,
I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm curious, too. I'm such a Star Wars nerd, though, that when the prequels came out, and everybody was just deriding them for all the problems they had with them. What I hear now is people are like, oh, yeah, that really wasn't that good. But I liked this, I liked that. You know, people kind of now are able to cherry-pick.
Well, because it moved on.
Right.
In other words,
exactly
things
right.
that are better. It's not like, Misa got no more episodes.
Right, well, that's why I'm saying I think the spinoffs really will play a part in Game of Thrones legacy. And if the spinoffs are Jar Jar-esque, oh boy.
That would be very strange in that world. Misa got a sword and a stone.
Well, Catfish, we're going to end this podcast by doing something that people have always loved, and that's returning to His Grace King Joffrey. First of his name, first in your hearts. And we're going to be talking about a special thing that just came out to us, a Joffrey POV chapter from A Dream of Spring. Can you believe it?
Oh, my God, A Dream of Spring. So we know for sure, whatever mistakes they may have made in the show, that George is not going to make these same kind of mistakes.
Oh, right. So let me just kind of do this preamble up top before we read this. Somebody reached out to Catfish and I recently, and it was kind of completely out of the blue.
That's why I like it.
And now this person, based on some of the things they wrote, we can believe this person wasn't happy with how Game of Thrones Season 8 was going and how it ended.
Catfish.
And they emailed us this top secret POV chapter from the final book in the Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Series. Now, this person,
okay.
You know, let's...
Now, hold on. Make sure you really, really mix up the name. So, what do we call him?
Right. We don't want to give it away, but let's just call him Morge Garten. Okay?
Okay, no one's going to figure that out.
All right.
Very, very well. Very well hidden.
So we think this Morge Garten is someone...
Morge Garten.
Right. He's connected with the series, but we don't want to say how. And so he sent us this thing, and it looks rushed. It looks like somebody just wrote it just now. You know, kind of there were misspelled words in it. It seems like they just watched the finale last week, and they threw this together. But
oh my God.
Because we trust this source, I think we should still read it to our loyal listeners.
Forge. Yeah, sounds good.
So we take you now to a chapter that, when it was sent to us, it was titled Joffrey 13, A Dream of Spring. You ready, Catfish?
Yeah, it's a 13. I love it. It's a magic number. Yes.
All right, so let's read it. The cold was still as cold as the cold had been cold before.
Oh, that's some good writing.
The snow was knee-deep everywhere, but where the men had shoveled it away to hack holes into the frozen ground with axe and spade and pick to make his camp. The wind was swirling out from the west, driving still more snow across the frozen field. The chill went bone deep, and the storm was unrelenting.
Oh, man, it's really painting a picture here.
Each morning, His Grace King Joffrey, who I told them was still alive because he had faked his death to catch the real usurpers, awoke hoping he might see the sun only to face another day of snow. The storm had buried every hut and hovel beneath a mound of dirty snow, and the drifts would soon be deep enough to engulf the vanguard. And there was no food beyond their falling horses and whatever meager sustenance their forages could find in this cold, dead wood. They had to be swift in building their fires because the snow was falling heavily as ever, and the wood would soon be soaked through. 4 days ago, one of the king's own squires had succumbed to the cold and hunger. As the boy fell, no snowflakes melted on his cold, cold face. The sun and moon had been gone so long, the drifts were deep, the wind was gushing, and every foot was a block of ice. Around King Joffrey, frostbite was claiming noses of his men. The blizzard's wind stung every face of every man. It was a white world of snow and silence, plowing through snowdrifts as high as thighs. The wind was rising, and still the snow fell. King Joffrey remembered tales of storms that had buried castles and cities and whole kingdoms under hundreds of feet of snow.
I know that you give me a hard time for not remembering things, but I mean, this sounds a lot like the preview, the Winds of Winter chapter that we read like a bunch of podcasts ago.
No. This is completely different. Completely different. You got to trust this guy who emailed it to us, Morge Garten.
Okay. Can we? I'm glad there's no food. I'm very happy about that. But can we go, like, I get the idea it's cold. Can we move past that?
Okay. Let me skip.
Past the description of the cold?
Let me skip later in the email. You ready?
Okay, good. Yeah.
A cold wind came across the field, and a cloud of ice crystals sparkled blue-white in the air. The cold outside had frozen men's blood. Outside the snow, it still fell. The snowmen the squires had built had grown into monstrous giants of snow.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure now that this is the same exact chapter that we read before.
Catfish, this was sent to us this week.
Skip ahead, then, okay. Please. Skip ahead, because I don't know. Either you're reading the same one, or Morge is stealing some of your intro.
Okay, here we go. Jumped a page down. You ready?
Okay.
White walls rose on either side of his forces as they made their way toward the Trident. The path between his troops had turned into a maze of icy trenches, shoveled out hourly to keep them clear. It was easy to get lost in the frozen labyrinth. A film of ice had formed on the swampy water of the Green Fork. Guards huddled outside his tent with their backs turned against the icy wind and blown snow,
Skip ahead.
All right, here we go. Let me skip one more page, all right? You fine? We're just going to skip another page.
Yeah.
It was cold.
Okay, skip ahead. We got that. It's cold. It's white. It's freezing.
All right, you ready? Here we go. The White Walkers and their army of the dead had smashed Winterfell, where the amassed armies of the North, the Vale, and Daenerys' troops joined forces to fight not just for their survival, but their survival of humanity as a whole. But without a true leader, the forces of the living were forced into retreat south. Night's Watchman Ed had died at Winterfell, as had Lyanna Mormont, and several other characters who I explained to the showrunners were very important, but they never introduced, including Strong Belwas, Patchface, Penny, Edric Storm, Moraine Waters, Jane Poole, John Connington, Young Griff, Lady Stoneheart, Osmond Kettleblack, Osney Kettleback, Osfrid Kettleblack, Boris Blunt,
Preemptive, skip ahead, please.
Catfish, there are like two more pages of names here.
Yeah, I got it. If only each one of those people was eating a specific dish that involved lampreys, maybe I'd listen to it.
Oh, but wait. I've got that right here.
No lampreys. No lampreys. No people. Now, Bob, before we go on any further,
yeah.
Did I hear you correctly say that written here it says, but I told the showrunners are very important?
It seems weird that he would put that in that Morge Jarton would write that in a chapter he was going to release. But like I said, this is hastily written.
Yeah, well, okay, all right. Morge may be showing a little bit more leg than he intended. Or she.
Right. We won't reveal Morge Jarton's true identity.
Good, all right. Let's go past all the names.
Okay, so here there's some lines. I want you to read King Joffrey's lines when we come to him, Catfish. You ready?
It's a higher honor I could not imagine.
Okay. The remaining army joined King Joffrey's forces at the Trident. King Joffrey stood on a cold snow bluff that was filled with snow that was cold, and he told the gathered forces,
Northmen! Dornishmen! Fighters from the Reach and the Vale! Westerlanders and Stormlanders, warriors from the other side of Narrow Sea. We shall defeat the Nine King, who isn't a real character from A Song of Ice and Fire, but when I told them about how I planned to introduce the Great Other, who is really the 13th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, they thought, cool, but too much backstory. And I said, there's even more backstory. So they just said, we don't have time to explain all that, so there's a Night King, sure, whatever. Whom we shall defeat in a big battle, because I am King Joffrey, first of his name, baddest ass of all characters. And when we win, we shall never fight again. Okay, that's it. No more war.
A cloaked figure on a horse appeared in the darkness. Could this figure be a savior against the forces of darkness? No, they could not, because as I told them multiple times, King Joffrey is the savior of the Song of Ice and Fire. Look at all the foreshadowing I did. The cloaked figure pulled back their hood to reveal Melisandre, the Red Woman. She walked through the forces up to his grace and demanded to go into his tent. King Joffrey followed her, worried about the deadly approaching forces. Melisandre said, "The Lord of Light will fight the darkness. You must take me to bed, King Joffrey, and make a shadow demon with me, my king." King Joffrey replied,
"But I was married to Marjorie Tyrell in front of a septon in the great sept of Baelor. I could never forsake my vows."
Melisandre cocked an eyebrow and said, "But your mother killed Marjorie the septon and blew up the sept." His grace dropped his royal trousers and said,
"The things I do for love."
The next several days were dark and filled with terror as the clouds from the Night King blocked out the sun in his wintry clouds. But King Joffrey did not leave his tent, as he filled Melisandre's must-needs. To increase his chances of making...
Is that what they're being called now?
To increase his chances of making a shadow baby, his grace also did lie with another red priestess called Kinvara. Suddenly, two more women entered the king's tent. Missandei of Noth called out, "Your grace, King Joffrey. This is Daenerys of House Targaryen, the first of her name, the Unburnt, Queen of the Andals, the Rhaenar, and the First Men, Queen of Meereen, of all the Great Grass Sea, Protector of the Realm, Lady Regent of the Seven Kingdoms, Breaker of Chains, and Mother of Dragons."
"Why have you called upon me?"
"Her Grace, Queen Daenerys, wants to procreate with you, King Joffrey."
"To make a shadow, baby? Daenerys, I did not know that you were a red priestess following the Lord of Light."
Queen Daenerys cleared her throat and said, "Oh, yeah, sure, yeah, that's totally why." Suddenly, Missandei screamed out, "Me too! I'm totally a red thing with the light stuff. You have to make sweet, sweet love to me too." And so King Joffrey did get busy with these two sexy traitors. Then he got busy with a double S.
Double S?
Sansa Stark.
Oh, Slutty Stark.
And then, as she left, her sister Arya Stark entered King Joffrey's tent as well. Arya claimed that Gendry had a small paddle when rowing the boat, and she needed King Joffrey's crossbow of love. By the time King Joffrey had emerged from his love tent, the northern forces had been destroyed by the Night King's army of the dead, except for all the major characters who were still alive because of reasons. King Joffrey drew up a shocking battle plan.
"We need a sacrificial lamb to act as bait for the Night King. Let's find the member of our team that is least important, someone who the Night King can kill, who no one will miss."
Bran Stark's eyes rolled back from working, and he said, "Why not Theon?" King Joffrey thought about it for a moment and replied,
"A wise choice, Bran. But we'll need someone to watch Theon to make sure he doesn't reek it up. You see what I did there?"
Bran Stark answered, "Why are you looking at me?" Joffrey replied,
"All your decisions led you here. You're exactly where you were meant to be."
"What a wise response, King Joffrey. May I use that turn of phrase?"
"Oh, you like it? Use it as much as you like. Just don't overdo it. I hate it when a phrase gets killed."
The Night King did come toward Bran and Theon. King Joffrey hid in the bushes with his remaining forces.
"Now remember,
No one should attack after the Night King has killed Dia.
Arya shouted. Did someone say no one? Leroy Jenkins!
Oh, seven hells! Arya Stark has attacked the Night King!
Jon Snow cried out. She's gonna drop the Valyrian steel dagger! And with that, King Joffrey ran across the lawn and caught the dagger as it fell. His grace did rise up and stab the Night King in apparently the exact same spot where he had been stabbed by the Dragonglass all those centuries ago. Jon Snow bowed before his king and said, Your grace, King Joffrey, you killed the Night King, but it was a tremendous victory that you had, but it was too dark for viewers at home to see it. We have ordered the cinematographer to be beheaded for his crime. With that, King Joffrey led the survivors back to King's Landing to recover, but something more evil was afoot. When King Joffrey saw what had become of his fair city, King's Landing, he was distraught. Everywhere he looked, the king saw feral cats running wild, despite King Joffrey's years of efforts to control the feral pet population. The true villain in this tale of ice and fire, Sir Pounce, the evil, vile, wicked cat who had manipulated his stupid brother, Prince Tommen, had conquered King's Landing. Joffrey's anger at the feral cats could not be contained. He screamed out,
We must do something!
When Queen Daenerys said, Hold my crossbow. And so Daenerys burnt the entire city to the ground. She wanted to impress his grace, which is a natural turn for the character, which no one would question as happening too quickly. In fact, trying to impress Joffrey, no one would say this turn for Dany's character wasn't earned. King Joffrey reflected on what he saw.
Look at this devastation. Look at this destruction. Thousands and thousands of dead feral cats. I've never seen a woman who hates feral cats like I do. I think I'm in love with Daenerys, my golden queen.
Then Jon Snow came up with blood on his sword. Your grace, after Daenerys killed all those people, I had to kill her.
You did what? You know nothing, Jon Snow. I sent you to the wall where you can mope and no one has to see it. I'm going to wipe the mopey mope off your face. Oh, how could I live here anymore with a woman that I love for her hatred of cats is dead? I shall go west of Westeros.
Evil Uncle Tyrion waddled forward and asked,
But who can rule in your place?
Let Bran Stark be king. I mean, look at all the foreshadowing that I've done.
Wow, and that's the preview chapter. It really feels like this is a first draft. This, whoever did this, they should really, you know, it seems a lot of, like, breaking the fourth wall. I didn't know
I was going to say that. You know, that happens sometimes in TV shows or movies, and it feels, like, very intentional. But this one feels like it's just sort of drunkenly slipping out.
Well, Catfish, this might be the last Joffrey POV chapter we ever have.
By the way, drunkenly slipping out is what we call a wedding night in the Stark household.
Listeners, we hope you have enjoyed these Joffrey podcasts. This isn't the last one. We're going to be recording our panel at Con of Thrones in July and releasing that. But we want you to follow us on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook.com/DoublePHQ because we got a lot of great podcasts we're going to be releasing, including one later this week. Catfish, you went to see a couple of great previews of two shows that are about to come out, and we're going to do podcasts on them. Let's tell everybody what they're about.
I love it. Good old Mork and I went to go see Deadwood, this was a little bit over a week ago now, and they told us some great stories that we share, and they were great when they shared them, and now you'll be the judge if they're great when Mork and I share the stories. And then I got to see an amazing screening Under the Stars at Hollywood Forever Cemetery of Good Omens, and I was super jazzed about that. So that is all happening this weekend, Bubba.
Yeah, very exciting. Both these shows start here in 2019 on May 31st, and so we're going to have that podcast out immediately after the Deadwood movie premieres. Then, later on in this month, we're definitely going to talk about Dark Season 2 on Netflix, and maybe even do a retrospective of Dark Season 1. We're going to start our coverage of a book that both Catfish and I have read, and our good friend Stephanie Persephone also read, called The Rook. It's about to premiere on Stars in the month of June. We've got so much coming at you. Double L's, we've said it so much. We do this show because we love speaking with you. And just, once again, from the bottom of our Joffrey loving heart, thank you guys for all the downloads, all the tweets, everything you've given us. We can't say much. We can't say enough how appreciative we are.
I am so thankful that we've had so many loyal listeners come on this journey with us, have found some kindred spirits among our loyal listeners, and so I'm extremely happy about that. And we'll be seeing a lot of them at the Con of Thrones in July. It's a scant 6 weeks away. And there's more to come from the Double P Media Network. We are taking over everything.
We're trying.
Like Disney has taken over everything, we are next. Disney, watch out. We're hot on your heels.
Until you hear from us next time, my name's...
Catfish.
Catfish, what do we need
to
do?
This is the wrap-up show. We have got to give a Joffrey of the Week for our wrap-up show here, Bubba.
Well, you go first, buddy.
All right, well, you know, as we covered here tonight, Joffrey likes to bide his time, and he likes to wait. And when he pounces, he is ready. It's strong, it's clear, it's not confusing in any way, and he backs up his actions with his own name. So tonight, my Joffrey of the Week is Morge Garten. Thank you, Morge, for having the bravery to send us this chapter, the last point of view Joffrey chapter that we'll ever read. Now, it's possible by the time it gets printed, it'll be slightly different.
No.
But, Morge, for giving us the heads up, you get my Joffrey of the Week. Well, what about you, Bubba?
I want to say that there is somebody who has inspired us ever since we started this podcast way back, I don't even know, 5-6 years ago, and that is our forefather, Double M.
Double M?
Matt Murdock, who started Podcast Winterfell and then started Matt's GOT audio blog, who's invited us to be on a panel with him at Con of Thrones in July. He got us on this crazy
train.
Not only
is he a friend, he's a double F.
Double F.
A foolish friend for inviting us onto his panel.
Right. Watch us ruin his panel in real time. So, tip of the cap, a crossbow to the stars for Double M Matt Murdock for convincing us that other people would want to listen to us. What a terrible mistake.
He was almost right.
For everyone here on the Double P Media crew, at Double P HQ, my name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter, at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I am Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGBand67 on Twitter. And we'll talk to you next time from the Con of Thrones on the
Joffrey of Podcasts. I can't believe Morge Garten got your Joffrey of the Week. That was pretty good. That was really good.
Come on. Look, Morge, he stood up when others wouldn't.